sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I want to focus on domestic terrorism and the origins of Al-Qaeda. You'll hear four audio clips addressing these issues, and that'll be followed by the details of a new television advertising campaign and an upcoming event. So let's get started with the first audio clip. This one talks about some of the earlier supposed domestic terrorist attacks. You can see the video of this by going to YouTube and searching for domestic terrorism. So here's the clip.
You don't really know what a terrorist looks like, what kind of car they drive, or anything else. So it's just basically everything and everybody and anything out here.
And bit by bit, the government found the network, a series of hidden cells in cities across the country, from Buffalo to Portland.
We thwarted terrorists in Buffalo and Seattle, Portland, Detroit, North Carolina, and Tampa, Florida. We're determined to stop the enemy before he can strike our people.
The Americans called them sleeper cells and asserted that they had just been waiting to strike. But in reality, there is very little evidence that any of those arrested had anything at all to do with terrorist plots. From Portland to the suburb of Buffalo called Lackawanna, yet again, the Americans were chasing a phantom enemy.
They say terrorist sleeper cell. They call the Lackawanna people a terrorist sleeper cell, the Detroit people a terrorist cell, the Portland people a terrorist cell. But when you look at the details, the facts just don't support that. And they have not proved that any group within the United States has plotted to engage in any terrorist activity within the United States in all of the cases that they've brought since 9/11.
The evidence behind all of the sleeper cell cases is flimsy and often bizarre. This tape was one of the central pieces of evidence in the first of the cases. It was found in a raid on this house in Detroit. Four Arab men were arrested on suspicion of being an Al-Qaeda sleeper cell. They had been accused by another immigrant called Mr. Mimza. But Mr. Mimza was in reality an international con man with 12 aliases and wanted for fraud across America. Despite this, the FBI offered to reduce his sentence for fraud if he testified against the men. And to back up Mr. Mimza's allegations, the FBI turned to the videotape. On the surface, it was the innocent record of a trip to Disneyland by a group of teenagers who had nothing to do with the accused. But the government had discovered a hidden and sinister purpose to the tape.
The government expert who has looked into surveillance tapes, casing tapes as he referred to them, said that one of the objectives of making these kinds of tapes is to disguise the nature, the real purpose of the tape. And he explained that the tape is made to look benign, made to look like a tourist tape, to obscure its real purpose as a tape to case Disneyland, and that the very appearance of it as being just a tourist tape is actually evidence that it's not a tourist tape. I could never get past the fact that the tape just looked like a tourist tape. The Disneyland ride, for example, was a lengthy queue, people just making their way to the ride. The camera occasionally pans to look at the rocks on the wall, made to look like an Indiana Jones movie, and after several minutes, the camera, it pans across and shows a trash can momentarily and then continues off to look into the crowd. The expert basically said that by flashing on that trash can for a moment, the people who are part of this conspiracy to conduct these kinds of terrorist operations, they would understand what this is all about, that how to locate a bomb in Disneyland in California. All the talking and banter were intended to disguise the hidden message contained within the tape.
The government was convinced that the tape was full of hidden messages. A brief shot of a tree outside the group's hotel room was there, they said, to show where to place a sniper to attack the cars on the freeway. And what looked like a camera which had accidentally been left running was in reality a terrorist secretly counting out the distances to show others where to place a bomb. And the government also said that the Detroit cell was planning to attack US military bases around the world. And yet again, they found hidden evidence for this in a day planner they discovered under the sofa in the house in Detroit. What looked like doodles were in reality, they said, a plan to attack a US base in Turkey.
The government brought in a security officer from the base to testify that she interpreted this as being the main runways. She identified these as being AWACS airplanes and these as being fighter jets. She said that these solid lines were lines of fire. She also said that this down here was a hardened bunker.
But the drawings in the day planner were discovered to have actually been the work of a madman. They were the fantasies of a Yemeni who believed that he was the Minister of Defense for the whole of the Middle East. He had committed suicide a year before any of the accused had arrived in Detroit, leaving the day planner lying under the sofa in the house. Despite this, two of the accused were found guilty. But then, the government's only witness, Mr. Mimser, told two of his cellmates that he had made the whole thing up to get his fraud charges reduced. The terrorism convictions have now been overturned by the judge in the case. But it was acclaimed by the president as the first success in the war on terror at home.
We have the terrorists on the run. We're keeping them on the run. One by one, the terrorists are learning the meaning of American justice.
Another case in the city of Buffalo in New York seemed on the surface to be more substantial. Six young Yemeni Americans had gone to an Islamist training camp in Afghanistan. They travelled there in early 2001 and spent between 2 and 6 weeks training and being taught Islamist revolutionary theory. Two of them even met bin Laden on one of his tours of the camp. They then returned to the Buffalo suburb of Lackawanna, where they lived. But they did nothing. The FBI heard about their trip, and they watched the six men around the clock for nearly a year. But there was no suspicious behavior. But then, one of the men, Mr. Al-Bakri, went to Bahrain and sent his friends an email. It said he was going to get married and he wouldn't be seeing them for a while. The CIA, who had been monitoring their emails, understood this to be a coded message. The cell was about to launch a suicide attack on the US Fifth Fleet.
The FBI, the government, took that phrase to mean something sinister. They believed that the word wedding was a code. They believed that the phrase not seeing you anymore indicated that Mukhtar al-Bakri was a suicide bomber. The reality is that Mr. al-Bakri was in Bahrain to get married. And the reality of him getting married is he wouldn't be around with his friends anymore.
Good afternoon. In the past 24 hours, United States law enforcement has identified and disrupted an Al-Qaeda-trained terrorist cell on American soil.
The arrests were announced proudly by Washington as another sleeper cell plotting an attack. But it soon became clear that there was no evidence for this at all other than the email.
And the best the government can point to as a sleeper cell are these young men in Lackawanna, New York, who, yes, went to Afghanistan, trained in an Al-Qaeda training camp, but from all appearances had no intention to ever take any action on the basis of that. One of them faked an injury to try to get out early. They came back to the United States. We had them under intensive surveillance, and we found no evidence, not one shred of evidence, that they ever planned or intended to engage in any kind of criminal, much less terrorist act. That's the best they can show for a sleeper cell.
Faced with the fact that there was no evidence, the government quietly dropped any charges of there being a terrorist cell. Instead, they were prosecuted simply for having gone to the training camp and for having bought uniforms there. And all the other cases were even flimsier. A group of students who supported the liberation of Kashmir were found paintballing in the woods of Virginia. They were convicted of training to attack America. A group of African Americans from Oregon tried to go to Afghanistan to support the Taliban, but got lost in China. All these groups, the government said, were part of a hidden and terrifying Al-Qaeda network.
The government had a legitimate concern at the beginning, but they let that concern and they took it and they made it a panic. They had reasonable questions and took them and made a complete fantasy out of them. They started out with a conclusion and then filled in all the blanks to the questions. So this was totally driven by the need or the desire to have terrorists. You build this conclusion based on this assumption and this assumption and this assumption. And sure, if you build assumptions upon assumptions, you can go anywhere.
It's a work of imagination.
It is. It's a fantasy. And it's a fantasy that it was politically expedient to sell.
And now here's James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com on March 21st, 2010, talking about some of the more recent supposed domestic terrorist attacks.
Lawyers for four men indicted for allegedly planning to bomb a Jewish center in Riverdale, New York, have revealed that the entire scheme was concocted and planned by an FBI informant in the group. The defense in the case has filed a dismissal motion, citing the claim that Shahid Hussein was a paid FBI informant whose mission was to radicalize disaffected Muslims and recruit them to join a fake terror plot. The motion suggests that Hussein was provided with as much as $250,000 for the case and had a government-provided BMW, Hummer, and other cars to make him appear to be a well-funded foreign terrorist operative. The government well knew that their case had been a government-inspired creation from day one and that the defendants had not been independently seeking weapons or targets, the dismissal motion said. This development was by no means a surprise to analysts, who have noted that every major domestic terror plot in the United States over the last two decades has been aided, abetted, funded, supplied, and often created by paid government informants. 8 years before bombs and nanothermite demolished the World Trade Center in New York, the original 1993 World Trade Center bombing was exposed as an FBI operation. The man who supplied the bomb-making materials to the bombers, a former Egyptian army officer named Imad Salem, was revealed to be an FBI informant who had been told to deliver the materials to the plotters. The original plan was to deliver fake materials so that the bombing could not go ahead, but FBI agents overseeing the case ordered him to give the real supplies to the plotters, and the attack went ahead, killing six and injuring 1,042 people. In December of 1993, the head of the FBI New York field office, James N. Fox, issued a blanket denial that the FBI had foreknowledge of the attacks, and the media stopped reporting on the story. Since then, the actual recordings between Salem and his FBI handler, Special Agent John Antichev, have been released.
He was start already building the bomb, which is went off in the World Trade Center. It was built by supervision from the Bureau and the GA, and we was all informed about it, and we know that the bomb start to be built. By who? By your confidential informant. What a wonderful, great case.
Wow.
And then he put his head in the sand and said, oh, no, that's not true. Okay, wow. It's built with a different way in another place, and that's it.
Well, don't make any risk, you know, decisions. I'm just trying to be as honest with you as I can.
Of course, I appreciate that.
And as far as the the payments go and everything like that, they're there. I guarantee you that they are there.
In 2007, convicted Oklahoma City bombing co-conspirator Terry Nichols was able to file an affidavit in U.S. District Court in Utah, alleging that the OKC bombing and Timothy McVeigh had been directed by a high-ranking FBI official. The affidavit indicated that Nichols had been trying to go public with the information about McVeigh's FBI help for years, but had been prevented from speaking to the press. He had also contacted former Attorney General John Ashcroft with the information, but never received a reply. In 2006, it was revealed that the so-called Miami 7, who had allegedly been attempting to strike targets in the U.S., including the Sears Tower, had in fact been organized, led, and supplied by a government informant who had convinced them that he was an Al-Qaeda operative. The case disappeared from the headlines after it became apparent that the men were in fact a group of unemployed underachievers with below-average cognitive abilities living in a warehouse.
And within the Corbett Report is this short piece from John Stewart's show.
Did the man have any actual contact with any members of Al-Qaeda that you know of?
The answer to that is no.
Did you find any explosives, weapons?
And you raise a good point.
You do raise a good point, that point being that these deadly international terrorists had very slyly disguised themselves as a bunch of dip-s living in a warehouse.
In 2008, the so-called Fort Dix terror plot was also revealed to be the single-handed creation of two FBI informants who created a plot to stir six foreign-born Muslims into taking on the U.S. Army at Fort Dix. The plot was foiled when the dim-witted conspirators asked a Circuit City employee to transfer their jihad training video onto DVD and asked police for maps to the Fort Dix Army base. Analysts are expecting this latest revelation to also be quickly swept under the rug by the corporate media and for the next large-scale domestic terror bust to be reported as if none of these previous incidents ever took place.
And now here's 9/11 truther John Gold reading from his article called "The Facts Speak for Themselves." This is his fact number 27.
The level of fear that resulted from the attacks of 9/11 was nourished and maintained and still is to this day. Reich Marshal Hermann Goering once said, quote, "Of course the people don't want war, but after all, it's the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it's always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy, a fascist dictatorship, or a parliament, or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to greater danger," end quote. On June 23, 2007, Glenn Greenwald wrote about how insurgents in Iraq were being referred to as Al-Qaeda more frequently. He states, quote, "What makes this practice all the more disturbing is how quickly and obediently the media has adopted the change in terms consciously issued by the Bush administration and their military officials responsible for presenting the Bush view of the war to the press," end quote. Fox News once suggested Al-Qaeda was responsible for starting California wildfires. Keith Olbermann ran two stories that I know of regarding the political usage of terror threats. The New York Times recently ran a massive story on how military analysts with, quote, "ties to military contractors," end quote, were being used by the Pentagon to, quote, "shape terrorism coverage from inside the major TV and radio networks," end quote. They, quote, "have echoed administration talking points, sometimes even when they suspected the information was false or inflated," end quote. As Hermann Goering said, fear makes people more manageable.
And now you're going to hear Canadian professor Michel Chusadovsky, who wrote the book War and Globalization, The Truth Behind 9/11. This is part of the companion video to the book. So here he is, Michel Chusadovsky.
It's not an issue of a narrow group of advisors, the so-called neocons, in the Pentagon and the State Department. It's a much broader process where particular groups of officials may come to rotate from one administration to the next so as to ensure the U.S. agenda of sequential theater wars, which is outlined in the PNAC. There's ample evidence to suggest that the Bush administration, senior officials within the Bush administration, were involved in acts of complicity and camouflage with regard to the events of 9/11. And this is not simply a question of foreknowledge. It's the fact that the CIA has supported Al-Qaeda, that Al-Qaeda is an intelligence asset, that Al-Qaeda has performed on behalf of United States covert operations in different parts of the world. It's not a blowback to the era of the Cold War. Once you recognize that Al-Qaeda is a creature of U.S. foreign policy and of the U.S. intelligence apparatus, your understanding and perceptions on 9/11 are totally different to what they might be in the case where you're an anti-war activist who wants to change the course of foreign policy, etc., etc. Because the lie, ultimately, behind this camouflage and complicity is so grotesque. I'm not suggesting necessarily that the Bush administration ordered the destruction of the World Trade Center, but if the Bush administration is saying that Al-Qaeda is behind it and that Al-Qaeda is a threat to America, while at the same time we have evidence that Al-Qaeda is collaborating with U.S. government agencies in covert operations in the Balkans, and that this happened, you know, barely a few months before 9/11, that we have evidence that Pakistan's inter-services intelligence, its military intelligence, supports the terrorists, supports these terrorist organizations, and that's corroborated by the Council on Foreign Relations. If that is true on the one hand, and if on the other hand, that this same organization, Pakistan's ISI, has closed bilateral relations with the CIA, with State Department, I mean, I'm talking at the very, very senior levels, then there's something fundamentally fishier on these links. Go beneath the surface, you then realize that, in fact, Osama bin Laden is a creature of the U.S. intelligence apparatus. His whereabouts are known. Al-Qaeda has collaborated with the U.S. military and intelligence and continues to collaborate. When you start looking into, let's say, the Bali bombing, and then you realize that the Bali bombing is conducted by a group which was trained in CIA camps in Afghanistan, that it has close links to Indonesian intelligence, and that Indonesian intelligence has close links to the CIA, well, then you say, well, there's something fishy there as well. These are things which people have to take cognizance of, because they are the tools of an anti-war movement. An anti-war movement is not simply one of expressing anti-war sentiment, of saying, I'm against the war. An anti-war movement is to disarm the main political and military actors behind the war agenda. It's to deconstruct them. It's to remove their legitimacy in the eyes of public opinion. A large segment of the anti-war movement actually supports the assumptions of the Bush administration regarding 9/11 to the fact that Al-Qaeda is a threat to the security of America and that the war on terrorism is a valid objective of U.S. foreign policy. Of course, that weakens the anti-war movement because you have a large segment of people who say, yes, I'm against the war, but I do support administration in the war on terrorism, as if the two things were disconnected. And the issue is that the war on terrorism is the justification for conducting the war. Namely, 9/11 and the hoax behind 9/11 and the government camouflage and conspiracy behind 9/11 becomes the instrument for waging a war on the so-called sponsors of terrorism, the state sponsors of terrorism, which are the countries such as North Korea, Iraq, Iran, and so on.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
And then you have this propaganda campaign which attempts to link a relationship between, let's say, Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. It's a failure to understand what is behind 9/11 as a, in fact, a conspiracy on the part of the U.S. government.
Again, that was Canadian professor Michel Jusodowsky. You can see more of his videos, read his articles, and even purchase his book, War and Globalization, The Truth Behind 9/11, by going to the great website globalresearch.ca. Another good source of information on the government's creation of and connection to Al-Qaeda is Peter Dale Scott's book, The Road to 9/11. And now I want to tell you about an ambitious TV advertising campaign to raise awareness of World Trade Center Building 7. A group of 9/11 truth-seeking organizations and individuals have come together for this advertising campaign, which is called Building What? The campaign was launched on 9/11 Blogger on Wednesday, August 11th, 2010, and here's what author David Ray Griffin has to say about it. Quote, recognizing the high correlation between those who know about the collapse of World Trade Center 7 and those who believe that a new, or rather real, 9/11 investigation is needed, I propose that the International 9/11 Truth Movement initiate, starting this September, a worldwide, year-long Building What campaign. Through this campaign, we would seek to make the fact of its collapse so widely known that the mention of Building 7 would never again evoke the question, Building What? Unquote. And here is some of what the organizers of this campaign have to say about it. Dear fellow truth advocates, today, the 11th of August, 2010, we are pleased to announce the beginning of the worldwide Building What campaign. For nearly 9 years, the American people and the world have been kept in the dark about an event of monumental significance, the freefall collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that was the third building to fall on September 11, 2001, even though it was not struck by a plane and suffered only minimal fire damage. Only a small minority of the public has seen footage of this collapse, but the vast majority of those who have seen the footage agree that the building was brought down intentionally, and they therefore support a new investigation of 9/11. In 1975, nearly 12 years after JFK's assassination, the public release of the Zapruder film created widespread doubt of the official account and eventually led to the creation of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. The committee found that the Warren Commission investigation had been seriously flawed and that there had indeed been a second gunman. The lesson we must take from this is that a few seconds of video footage can help reshape the way a country views the event of its generation. There is a reason why the mainstream news media won't discuss or air footage of the collapse of Building 7, because that footage is the Zapruder film of 9/11. As the first step in the worldwide effort to spread awareness of the collapse of Building 7 to every corner of the globe, we have come together to co-sponsor the Building What television advertising campaign in New York City. Our goal is to enlighten over 1 million New Yorkers with footage of Building 7's freefall collapse. The plan is to blanket the New York City television market with our ad during the week of September 20th, 2010. We are seeking to raise $500,000 between August 11th and September 11th, 2010 to cover the cost of this effort. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is now a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, and so every dollar that is donated to this campaign will be fully tax-deductible. We ask you now to unite in a movement-wide effort and give as much as you can to make this campaign possible. We must prove to ourselves what we are capable of. Let's start a tidal wave of truth that will grow from city to city until tens of millions of people learn the truth about 9/11. Please read the details and consider becoming a part of what will perhaps be the most important effort ever to awaken the public to the truth. And this letter, posted to 911blogger.com on April 11, 2010, is signed by Manny Badillo, who lost his uncle in the towers, Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, David Ray Griffin of Religious Leaders for 9/11 Truth, Niels Harrit, the co-author of the World Trade Center Nanothermite Study, Karen Johnson of Political Leaders for 9/11 Truth, Eric Lawyer, Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, Bob McElvain, who lost his son in the towers, J.F. Ranger of World for 9/11 Truth, Kevin Ryan, co-editor of the Journal of 9/11 Studies, Ted Tilton Jr. and Justin Keough of 911blogger.com, William Veal, lawyer for 9/11 Truth, and Ted Walter of NYC Can. The ad will feature a handful of 9/11 family members together with the most compelling footage of Building 7, and it's going to be unveiled on Friday, August 27th, so stay tuned for that. To learn more about it, you can go to buildingwhat.org. And they're asking people to donate generously to help out with this advertising campaign. And now for the event. Hope Out Loud is an annual peace festival in Bushnell Park to commemorate 9/11. This year it's on Sunday, September 19th, so save the date. More details will follow on future broadcasts. And there will be a 9/11 table at the event with free movies and literature, so mark your calendars at September 19th in Bushnell Park in downtown Hartford. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.